Support for this show comes from Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. With Splunk, you get more control with unified security and observability, so you can sidestep those disruptions. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast, so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. Some of the world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. Splunk lets you react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience.
It is yet another steamy, hot Tuesday here in Philadelphia, and it is the Out of Sight Podcast. I am your host, Adil Royster, Chill Ride, Chill Vibes, as always. It is the Out of Sight Podcast, a Vox Media podcast. and today on the pod, we got Sean Kennedy on, and we're going to talk about the NBA Finals. We're going to talk about the Bucks and exercising patience. And then he talked about Brad Beal saying he wanted to, basically, Beal wants to come to Philadelphia if a trade is available. Sean, how you feeling being a part of this Vox Media conglomerate?
Yeah, I feel like we need to explain why this is funny to us. Our friends at the Gastroenteritis Blues podcast had some like significant reporting on their recent episode with Jake Fisher about Ben Simmons and the team not being in contact since the season ended. So,
right. And listen to that podcast too. That's kind of important.
Yes. It's a good episode. And a little more newsworthy than their usual. They're usually a little more humor slanted, but they had Jake on breaking some news. But yeah, definitely give that a listen. And of course, all the aggregators out there were, reporting the report, and none of them wanted to say the Gastroenteritis Blues podcast.
Say the name. Jesus.
So we heard every variation of a Liberty Ballers pod, Liberty Ballers podcast network, and our favorite was a Vox Media podcast. if you don't know, Vox Media is the umbrella corporation that owns SB Nation, and we are an SB Nation affiliate blog. So it's like saying you're going to Chase Bank.
Yeah.
Instead saying like you're going to an FDIC insured bank or something. Like it's so far removed, in the specious genus conversation that it's hilarious.
And listen, shout out Vox Media. We love you. We love everybody in Vox Media, but come on.
My direct deposit says Vox Media every month.
That's
so
fine.
I got no beef with Vox Media
whatsoever. But for the rest of y'all, say the name. We know how ridiculous it is to say the Gastroenteritis Blues or to write it down. We yes. understand that, but you know what? It's fun for us. So what the hell?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, so that aside, I'm glad to be on the Out of Sight podcast.
You are guest number 50, actually.
Very nice. So
so let's just start there. How did you enjoy the NBA Finals and Giannis dropping a 50 piece on a Phoenix in Game 6?
Yeah, the 50 piece nugget.
Yes.
It was in a highly entertaining finals. So I enjoyed watching it a lot. It was funny how the first three games, it was 2-1, but every one of the games had been a double digit margin of victory.
Yeah.
So, but everyone was like throwing out these, not everyone, but you know, the talking head types were throwing around the worst finals ever kind of narratives and like putting the polls up. And it's like, first of all, it's 2-1, so it's competitive. We don't know who's going to win the finals. Like, so far home teams have held serve,
right? But Phoenix is good at home, Milwaukee is good at home, like what? Yeah. there's that old phrase where it's like it's not a series until the home team loses.
Exactly. And you know, even though they were double digit margins early on, like there was still entertaining basketball being played.
Yes.
Both teams were very fun to watch. They had, you know, interesting styles. There's some contrasting matchups that were fun to examine. And then as the series progressed and, you know, Milwaukee started taking control, but we had great games. Like I believe it was game five where the last 3 minutes were just absolutely ridiculous. And that
game
that's
five
the one...
is some of the best NBA finals basketball I've seen in a long time.
Yes. And ending with the lob from Drew to Giannis.
Amazing. Again, need to point out his knee bent backwards 90 degrees the wrong way 2 weeks prior to that.
Yeah. We came in to the finals not really knowing, like, oh, is he going to be available? If he is, like, is he going to be a shell of himself, or is he just trying to push through it to, you know, because it's the finals and that's what he feels he needs to do? But he's out there like putting up historically great numbers in the finals. He had two of the most iconic plays in playoff history with both the lob and his block on DeAndre Ayton the game prior.
Oh, the chase down block. Good Lord.
Just an absolutely all-time incredible performance from him. And yeah, the fact that he came in and we weren't really 100% certain of his health status. Just remarkable by Giannis. He deserves all the accolades that have been thrown his way. And yeah, it was just a great finals to watch. I mean, if you're a basketball fan, I don't know how you would have been disappointed with that.
Shout out to the quote unquote small markets of Milwaukee and Phoenix for putting on an epic NBA finals this year.
Yeah. Those crowds in Milwaukee were.
Those crowds in Milwaukee are nuts.
Yeah. And the ones outside too, when they're
the
they're
ones
shown,
outside,
like the, what, I don't know what they called it, but their version of the,
like Deer Park, I think it is.
Yeah. Deer Park or whatever. And there was just like hundreds of thousands of people all crowded together. And then you see a screenshot and there's like one porta potty in the middle of the crowd. And you're like, prayers up for that porta potty.
Shout out to that porta potty doing the Lord's work out there in Milwaukee.
Like, yeah. So whenever people talk about small market, quote unquote, like that's all relative. There's still plenty of people that are hugely enthusiastic about basketball in each of these areas. And they showed out in a big way. It was good to see.
Real quick. If the Sixers win the NBA Finals, what Sixer is most likely to do the driving through the drive-through ordering a 50 piece? Is Joel the obvious answer?
Yeah, I mean, he would finally, he'd have the championship, so he could be like, all right, I don't need to do the, I'm staying an arm's length away from social media anymore. I think it would just be like, vintage Joel trolling everyone.
Yes,
like, hey, here's my Shirley Temple with my 50 piece. I who cares about diet? I'm going to take a break from the diet and everything and just go balls to the wall. Yeah, it would have to be Joel. I mean, it's the obvious answer, but I don't think there is another one.
I mean, I would thoroughly enjoy Matisse videos. I will say that
Matisse would be like the Matisse. He'd have like this ESPY worthy documentary he would put together afterwards. I don't know how much of it would be just the laughable stuff that we would all see on TikTok or Instagram or wherever. I feel like he'd have a really well curated vlog that would come out.
Matisse would make us both laugh and cry at the same time.
Yes, he'd be the Wes Anderson of the NBA.
Speaking of such feelings. Did you have any kind of feeling of like living vicariously through Jrue Holiday at all? I mean, after all, his trade kind of kicked off the process. So that's more or less what I was rooting for the most in the NBA Finals, aside from, you know, six or seven great games.
Yeah, I don't think that was quite my feelings on it. I mean, I still root for Jrue from afar, and I'm obviously very happy he won. Not only is he a former Sixer, but he's just one of the great human beings in the NBA world. Like him and his wife both do a ton of charitable endeavors. When his wife had the cancer scare, like right. He was by her side. You could just tell he's such a devoted husband and family man. Like, so you're just happy whenever you see a person like that succeed in life. So yeah, you add that to the fact that he's a former Sixer and, you know, drafted by the team and made the All-Star team in Philadelphia. Like, you obviously have a lot of good feelings for him, but that was like still a long, it was a while ago. Like, I wasn't, I wasn't going in like, hey, we got to win this one for Drew. I would think before he got injured, I was also like, oh, it'd be really fun for Dario to get a ring. Like, he'd be the first like true process core guy right. to get a ring. Unfortunately, he suffered the ACL injury in game one. But I was just rooting for good basketball on either side. I didn't have I'd like to see Milwaukee win this kind of feeling, but you know, I'm very happy that Drew won and he had the strip and the pass to Giannis. So he's a big part of that iconic NBA playoff moment. So good for him. I'm super happy for him.
The Milwaukee Bucks, as you wrote in your column, exercised a lot of patience. They didn't go after the big star just because he was the big star. They got Drew Holiday. They got PJ Tucker. They had Chris Middleton on the roster. And, you know, say what you want about him, but it has been said in some circles, not necessarily mine, that he's an overqualified second banana. I mean, not to say that he could be like the number one on a championship team, but Milwaukee, to their credit, they just kept going and plugging in where they felt they needed to plug in with guys like PJ Tucker, for example. You see Brooklyn doing it their way, and it's like Milwaukee just said, no, we're not doing it that way. And Giannis as well, I'm not winning a ring that way. Like, it makes me feel good as a Sixers fan that we are still exercising, you know, little bits of patience here and there.
Yeah. So I wrote that column last week, and I don't feel I clearly put my stance forward because there seemed to be some confusion from the commenters and stuff. So right. Yes, the organization does need to show some patience, but as I pointed out and people remarked upon, like, they also kind of made all-in moves with the Drew Holiday trade, where they gave up a ton of draft assets to bring Drew in, and they also made like a win now, what you would consider a win now trade to get PJ Tucker, because they gave away draft assets for a guy on expiring, because that's what you have to do if you really are all in for a championship push. But right. You know, they also exhibited patience and they stuck with Bud, for example.
Yeah.
When a lot of people were calling for him to be gone. And shout out to the guy.
You mean 75% of the city of Milwaukee?
Yes. Shout out to the guy at the championship parade who still held up the fire budget sign. he just coached you to a title, but you want to fire him still?
Like, we love you, Milwaukee fans. You guys are the best.
That was classic. But yeah, and like, Giannis exhibited patience by sticking with the franchise, and as you just pointed out, he said he didn't want to do it any other way. Like, he'd rather win one by staying and doing it with his guys than win potentially multiple by going and joining some sort of super team or whatever. So yes, all those things, there was patience on behalf of the organization to a degree, and Giannis for staying put and not forcing his way out. But it was also, and this is the part I don't feel like I put forth as clearly as I might have liked, like, just on the behalf of the fan base.
Right.
Because, yes, you get the superstar player, and in the Bucks case, it was Giannis. For the Sixers, it's Embiid, who just came off an MVP runner-up season. So I think you're being willfully ignorant if you don't consider him the kind of number one option that could win a title. But then you look at, like, the best players of this and the previous generation. Michael Jordan took 7 years to win his first title. LeBron took 9 years to win his first title. Giannis just did in 8. So as a fan base, yes, it's frustrating when the Sixers have been having these disappointing playoff exits these past few years, but we're still only entering Embiid's 6th full NBA season
right.
next season. And that is including his 2 years missed due to injury. But I think that's still a factor. He wasn't getting NBA reps or court time. So, like, legitimately, he's going into his 6th full NBA season. So we just mentioned the other 3 previous finals MVPs. I don't want to call Giannis an all-time great yet, but LeBron and MJ are both definitely all-time greats. They're on the Rushmores of the sport. So it still took them that long to reach the highest level of team success. So Embiid still has a little bit of a window before you should really start entering that panic mode. And I think that's all I wanted to say, is that there's still time. Like, just because the team didn't get it done the past few years like they might have liked, and this year is particularly frustrating because it looked like the path was there, like, the window isn't shut, and just kind of keep the faith. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't be hoping that Daryl makes improvements to the roster, and that doesn't mean improvements to the roster don't need to be made, but just kind of just pull people back from the ledge a little bit, and just right. realize that there's still time, and there's things can still go all right for the Embiid era.
Wait, did you just try to convince people to come in from the ledge
or living, the Ben Franklin Bridge, wherever
living in Philadelphia? Like, are you?
I know it's hard.
I'm sorry. Are you new here?
Yes, it is Negadelphia, so I realize it's very hard.
Let me elaborate a little bit more on this Embiid talk. I mean, he's only 27. He's a UFA in 2023, that offseason, and he's got the Supermax extension that's coming whenever it happens. So it sounds like you feel the Sixers don't need to win before the 2023 offseason. It sounds that way to me. That's kind of where you're getting at.
I'm just saying it's not inconceivable that the title could come after that. And I realize it's a little bit different with Embiid because he's a big man and he has an injury history. So people feel like the prime window for him might be a little shorter than it would be with a guard or a wing or whatever. And given his injury history and everything. So that's all fair. And I feel like that's a necessary caveat to mention when you're discussing Embiid's prime. But I just feel like, just because they haven't won it yet, I don't think that people should be as down on Sixers basketball as they are right now.
We also haven't seen any team that runs their offense through the big man on the precipices of an NBA Finals berth in a while, even with Anthony Davis in New Orleans. Like, the Pelicans were never really that close until they brought in DeMarcus Cousins to pair with him. And even then, they were still having to go through Houston and Golden State and those teams out there. Like, out in the East, there's no real big man to really get in Embiid's way or anything like that. So, yeah, I feel like the rushing or the saying that we can't waste Embiid's prime. Personally, I think his prime is a little bit elongated based on the fact that, you know, he's in the Eastern Conference. And with the exception of Giannis, there's not a whole lot of real big bangers down there, like putting up like 30 and 15, making Embiid work on both ends.
Yeah. Plus, there's the fact that he did a tremendous job improving his outside shot this past season. So as he ages, he just shot 37% from three
right
this past year. And I'm just trying to scroll through to find his playoff numbers. But as he ages in his career, like, that's going to translate. And I can only imagine he would continue to improve in that area. He was around 40% in the playoffs. So you got a 7-footer who, yeah, he might lose a little bit of mobility or whatever as he ages, but if he's a 7-footer that can shoot 38 to 40% from three, like, that's still going to play for a few more years as in his post prime window. So yeah, it's just generational talents, just like him, just don't come around very often. So I don't expect anyone to crop up in the East or, you know, anywhere else that is really going to be on his level at the position.
Right.
Support for this show comes from Splunk. Digital systems let businesses do incredible things, but they also introduce plenty of potential points of failure. Disruptions can happen anywhere, at any time, and even with a ton of resources, it's not always easy for businesses to connect the dots quickly. But Splunk can help you get more control. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues quickly, so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. With Splunk's unified security and observability, you can sidestep those disruptions and keep operations humming. You can detect and investigate incidents faster, get guidance to identify root cause, and understand the impact. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. Splunk lets you react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions and build digital resilience with Splunk. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I think people are overblowing the situation just a little bit. Like the Sixers were right there this year. They're still right there. I picked Milwaukee at the beginning of the season, but I knew that the Sixers had a legitimate chance. And I agree that the road was literally right there. Injured Washington team and a young Atlanta Hawks team that was just playing on house money, and they just caught us. You know, that stuff like that happens.
And yeah, just to circle back to the patience thing real quick, like an example of the organization not having patience would have been ceding to whatever crazy offer Toronto wanted to get Lowry in.
Yes.
Like if they had given up Maxey and Thibault and the pick for to bring in Lowry, like would they have been a slightly better team with Lowry? Sure. But they also would have lost some depth, and we saw how valuable that depth was in the playoffs when Danny Green went down and suddenly they're starting Korkmaz. And if you had also traded Thibault away to bring in Lowry, like who would be the wing defender besides Ben if Danny goes down? Like,
yeah,
you just wouldn't have had anyone available. So in a vacuum, people might have said, oh, that's a great move. Like, look how great the starting group is now that we brought in Kyle. But then, you know, something happens, like Danny gets injured and suddenly you don't have any depth, and we could be in the same position we are now, but we don't have Maxey and Thibault for the future.
And even with Lowry on the team, somehow Doc Rivers would do like still Tobias and all bench lineups that would just frustrate the hell out of us.
Exactly. So yeah, that was an example of Daryl. You know, he made a few all-in-ish moves. You know, he went after George Hill and traded a pick away to do that. But he also still kept an eye towards the future and didn't give up the barn for an expiring Kyle Lowry.
Now we get to this offseason, and we're entering yet another phase of the Sixers organizational construct. It's got more phases than the damn Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point.
We're probably around phase five.
I'm getting a little frustrated. I don't know who's in the front office anymore aside from Daryl Morey. Like, is there anybody? Elton's still in the front office. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's two. I will say, and I definitely agree with you, that Daryl was really smart and not saying, okay, you know what, I'm just gonna do this Kyle Lowry trade and just see what happens. Because 1,000%, no slight on Elton, but 1,000% Elton would have just done that.
Yeah, the evidence from the Tobias trade suggests he might have, yes.
Yeah.
Given the couple big moves he made, it did seem like he overpaid in each instance.
And now we've got Daryl Morey in the front office, and I still can't believe that we have Daryl Morey in the front office. I have to smack myself daily when I read stuff on Liberty Ballers that says president of basketball operations for the Sixers, Daryl Morey. I still have to pinch myself a little bit. I think I've been more confident going into an off season as far as like what the team needs and the person guiding the ship to get there. I cannot think of a more confident time for this team right now that I felt in between roster construction and the person doing the constructing.
It's a good feeling. Yeah. You have the guy who has widely been considered among the handful of best general managers in the league over the past decade. And it's funny how we just kind of like don't talk enough about the fact that he came to Philadelphia last offseason. It completely came out of nowhere.
Like, nowhere.
And, you know, he didn't have the full offseason last year to do his all his Daryl things. It was a very weird
all
situation.
All his number crunching.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But you know, we were in the middle of the pandemic. It was a truncated offseason. He came in at the tail end of it to join the Philadelphia organization. So now he has a more normalish offseason. It's still shorter than most years because the season ended later than it normally would. But there's actually going to be a summer league, and there's the draft has some time before and after it. It's not guys getting drafted and 2 weeks later they're playing in NBA exhibition games. So it's definitely a much more normal offseason than it was last year. So yeah, you have to be excited about having Daryl with time at his disposal to go out and make moves and do what he needs to do to improve the roster. Now, the counter to that would be the Ben Simmons situation, and all signs point to these parties parting ways, but you've lost basically all your leverage because everyone knows that Ben Simmons' time in Philadelphia is basically up.
Yeah.
And also he is coming off a couple games in the Atlanta series, which probably put his value at an all time low.
Worst playoff series of Ben's short career.
Yeah, and there had been some poor ones in the past. Like, he doesn't have a great history of performing at his best in whatever playoff round the Sixers have been eliminated in the past few years. So you got a guy who his value's at a low for him, but still, you know, incredibly talented player, and most teams in the league would be thrilled to have him on board, but also they know that the Sixers have very limited leverage in the situation. So it's not a great situation for Daryl to navigate right now, but you feel confident that he's at least a guy that can get it done.
With normal off seasons, there's always going to be, you know, names getting thrown around. Personally, I'm over Dame Lillard, especially if it's like, he basically said he didn't want to be traded out of Portland. So I take him at his word for now. But you wrote about Brad Beal saying that he would be down to come to Philly. He also listed Boston, Golden State, and Miami. And let me just ask this. Can either of those teams really realistically offer better than Ben plus Matisse or Maxi and picks?
Well, Boston could offer Jalen, but why they wouldn't do that, it wouldn't make sense. It'd basically be a lateral move for them.
It's one for one swap.
Yeah. So aside from that, I'm not sure what they could do. So I would say no in that case. Miami, every like hooper on NBA Twitter feels like Miami has this Hero and Duncan Robinson sign and trade package that every other team in the league should like be salivating over, but
Miami has no picks.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't have picks. And like, I got a newsflash for you. Hero and Duncan Robinson, while, you know, valuable players to have on a roster, are not getting you a star.
They're not getting you Bradley Beal.
They're not even getting you Brandon Ingram. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So those, if that's what Miami has to offer, they're not going to be in these star level conversations. And then Golden State, they have the Wiseman and their two top 14 picks to offer. That's potentially something that other teams like a Washington might want to take a look at, because if they wanted to go full rebuild, getting last year's number two overall pick and two picks in the top 14 this year. That's not a bad place to start.
That's true.
Objectively, I'd rather have Ben. I think from a value standpoint, that would be a better place to be, to get a guy who was a defensive player of the year runner up and already has an all-star game under his belt and is still pre-prime and a young player. I think you can make an argument for Golden State.
Would Golden State have to throw Wiggins in too to make the contracts work?
Yeah, I believe that they would. So it's not a terrible, like there's less outrageous rumors that have been floated out there. But you know, I still don't think that's enough to get a Bradley Beal. So I feel like the Sixers are definitely the best positioned, because no one else is offering a young all-star in return for these stars like Damon and Bradley Beal that are on the market.
Yeah, let's just recap: multi-time all-star, defensive player of the year runner-up, and all NBA defender. And oh, by the way, he's under 26 years old.
Yeah, it's still a really good
return. What you're getting when you trade for Ben Simmons.
Yeah, which is good and bad because you're coming off of playoffs and you know what you're getting also means that you're getting a guy who won't dunk on Trae Young with the game on the line.
That hurts, Sean.
But as I said in that article, Washington, if they were going to go full rebuild, they might be in a position where they didn't really want Ben because that might win them. Ben's an excellent regular season player. He would win them a handful of games in the regular season, where if they're going full rebuild, they might not want to. So maybe realistically, a better option might be for a three team where somebody like Minnesota, who really has shown an interest in bringing Ben on board, would get Ben, Sixers would get Beal, and then Washington would get a bushel of draft assets from Minnesota and young players. You probably throw Maxi into a deal like that. So there's definitely a framework for something to get done. If Beal was to really push his way out of Washington, you could definitely see how these parties would fit.
I do have a fake Beal trade, but I'm going to hold that until after this point. Let's say that Lillard does come back around, I don't know, before the season starts, whatever, and says, all right, yeah, I'm done, I'm out of Portland. Which would you prefer? Beal's youth, he's UFA in 2023, or Lillard's control because he's not a UFA until 2025?
Yeah, I mean, in a vacuum, I'd take Lillard. He's a better player. I think his shooting ability and his gravity to, like, aside from Steph Curry, no one shoots as efficiently from near the logo as Dame does in the league.
Yeah.
So that really opens up your offense, and you can start running those high pick and rolls, and just that'll create so much space for everybody else on the floor. Beal's an incredible, like, tough shot maker, where you can give him the ball and you can feel pretty confident that he's one of the better guys in the league to score with somebody on him from 18 feet away with, you know, 4 seconds left on the shot clock. Like,
he'll get a bucket when you need it.
Exactly. So to say I want Lillard over Beal isn't to discount what an incredible player Beal is. And if he's the guy who is available between the two, you do what you have to do to get Beal. You don't not go after Beal because Dame might hypothetically be available at a later date. But I think Lillard's the better outside shooter. I think he would do more to open up the offense than having Beal on board, who, you know, is a good shooter. But I think as far as like 3-point shooting and as a catch and shoot guy, he's only like average to slightly above league average in those areas, whereas Lillard's just like top five outside shooter in the league. As far as stretching the floor, creating space for others, the gravity he brings to the table. I just think all of those things would, I would lean towards getting Lillard. But you know, we don't live in a world where both those guys are available and you get the pick. So you take the guy you can potentially get.
Okay, here's my fake Beal deal. And yeah, just print those t-shirts right now. The Beal deal, just print those t-shirts.
Yep.
So Philly would get Brad Beal and Ricky Rubio from Minnesota. Just hold your applause or your disdain until the entire trade is done.
Unfortunately, it wouldn't be the Olympic version of Ricky Rubio.
It would not. Washington gets Maxey, Malik Beasley, Culver, and a bevy of picks from both Philadelphia and Minnesota, and then Minnesota gets Simmons. Like that, it's a rough framework. Don't get me wrong. It's a rough framework.
Yeah, that's basically kind of what I outlined, is very similar to what you just said. Like the Sixers would be giving up Simmons and Maxey in exchange for Beal. So from a value standpoint, I think that's reasonably fair.
I tried to do everything possible to keep Matisse out of the trade because him in the second unit and another all NBA defender, I can't give that up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. If you're trading away Simmons this offseason, I don't see how you can trade away Matisse, because he would automatically slot in as your defender of opposing team's best perimeter guy. And we don't even know if Danny Green's coming back. Like, he's a free agent. So
right.
if Ben is traded away and Danny doesn't come back, like, you absolutely need Matisse on the wings. Like, there's nothing else behind him. So yeah, I think as much as we love Maxey, if it has to be a young guy also being shipped out in a Ben trade, I think it has to be Maxey over Matisse.
I do like the fact that the Rubio, Beal, Thibault kind of starting in the starting lineup and moving Seth to the bench. I actually like Seth Curry a lot better as a like second unit guy coming off the bench. So I don't know how you feel about Rubio as the starting point guard, but at the same time, if you're trading Ben Simmons away, you have to have a point guard. And yeah. I feel like Ricky Rubio is not the worst choice.
No, especially if you bring in a guy like Beal, who will be the primary shot maker, creator. Rubio would be the distributor and guy to set up the offense. You wouldn't need him to be the score 18 points a game point guard, because you have Beal to carry the scoring load, and obviously right. Embiid and Toby in the front court. So yeah, I mean, I think that'd be a very worthwhile addition to any deal. I think Rubio is a guy that can still help a contender down the line.
And he is an expiring free agent, so his contract would be up at the end of next season anyway. So you're already trading for Bradley Beal, and you're already losing some draft capital with Maxey and all the picks that you have to give up, and you're giving up Simmons. So like Beal and Rubio as a return, even if it's a 1 year rental of Rubio, but you get Beal in the deal, and yeah, that works. I stamp it right now, Daryl. I'll do that trade today. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything where you get Beal in return, you would do, as if it's just Simmons and Maxey and you're not getting crazy having to offer up anything else of value. I think you just Beal alone would be fine in my book. Minnesota obviously would be thrilled to have Simmons on board. I think it all depends on what Washington, how much they value Beal, like what kind of leverage they have, if he's truly like forcing his way out, or if it's just kind of a lukewarm, hey, I'd like you to make improvements to the team. Because I haven't taken a hard look at what Minnesota's draft assets would be, but whether that plus Maxey and their young guys that aren't Anthony Edwards, yeah. Like they're tertiary young guys. I don't know if that really moves the needle for Washington, but I guess it would be how highly they viewed the future draft assets that would be coming in from Minnesota to supplement like Maxey as the young player headliner.
My apologies to our colleague Kevin Rice. I tried to get Ish Smith in the deal, but he's a UFA, so they would have to sign him out, right? Unfortunately. And Kevin, I love you, but only you are trying to sign and trade for Ish Smith.
Well, the Sixers can just sign Ish. They can use the mid-level and bring him back to be the backup point after Simmons gets traded.
Boy, Ish is worth way more than the mid-level exception. We all know that. Sean, always a pleasure having you. Thank you for being my 50th guest. It's always a pleasure. Yeah, what do you got going on? Tell people how they can find you and locate you and talk to you and send nourishing things to you.
They can talk about how the Sixers don't need to be patient and yes, they should be all in immediately. And
yeah,
I'm crazy.
All those emails, all those tweets go to Sean, folks.
Yes. Yeah, you can find me at Philly Fast Break on Twitter. The Talking About podcast, which I co-host with Dan Olinger. We record every Thursday, comes out on Friday mornings. That's on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, which is also a Vox Media pod. And I'm still putting stuff up from time to time on libertyballers.com, which is a Vox Media website. So yeah, find stuff there.
This is gonna be such a running gag, and I'm here for it. I'm here for all of it.
Yes, it's you know, shout out to Vox. Let those direct deposits keep coming in.
Yeah,
I'm okay if they get the shout out every once in a while.
From Vox Media. I don't want any smoke from Vox Media at all. Just no, we love you guys. That's all we have to say. Always good talking to you, Sean. I'll talk to you next time I can, buddy.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Support for this show comes from Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. With Splunk, you get more control with unified security and observability, so you can sidestep those disruptions. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast, so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. Some of the world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. Splunk lets you react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.